Volkov. We are in the middle of this parak. We are on Pasuk Yud, which Yud Aleph, rather, which is found on page 342. Now, we learned last week on Memorial Day, see, we don't take vacations, and we were discussing about how there was an individual by the name of Amasa, who was actually in charge of David's army, and Yoav was underneath him, and Amasa did something which is questionable, if he was right, he was wrong, was it so bad. He was given 3 days' time to gather up some troops, and the 3 days came and went, and he was nowhere to be found. Now, for some reason, Yoav took it upon himself that this was enough of a reason that he should be killed. As the commentaries explain, he was Mord B'Malchus. He rebelled against the king. And even though some people question how would Yoav have the right to do so, it's the king's choice. We don't find that David said that, you know, Amasa deserved to be killed for it. So some people explain that when there is a concept of Mord B'Malchus, and which is a capital offense, when it comes to that particular crime, everyone has the authorization to put this person to death. It doesn't make a difference. And therefore, Yoav felt that it was his responsibility to carry out the honor of David, and therefore to have his life taken away. And that's exactly what happened. Not necessarily, as we're going to see in the very last sentences of this chapter, which we are anticipating to finish, perhaps David didn't even agree to this. Maybe David didn't feel that Amasa deserved to die, and it certainly is questionable whether or not he should have been killed.
But
it was more of a Malchus again, because perhaps he was lax in listening to the words of the king. That the king said, you have 3 days to gather up some troops. Exactly. It sounds a little bit far-fetched. On a more humanistic level, we know that Yoav, who was involved in Avshalom's death, David's son's death, so David placed him underneath Amasa. And perhaps this was there's a lot of tension in the power, the struggle of trying to obtain that level of power. And Yoav looked with much animosity toward Amasa, who took over his position. So he was looking for any excuse to have him killed. And was he Mord B'Malchus? Some say he was, or at least Yoav wanted to hang his hat on that, even as small as it may have been, perhaps for his own ulterior motives, if I could dare say such a thing about Yoav. But nonetheless, we know Yoav is engaged in war. So.
I forgot where he from. Was he related at all?
Amasa, as we saw in Pasuk Tes, was Yoav's first cousin. They were actually related. Apparently that didn't stop him from killing him. So Amasa was obviously a very powerful individual who was placed in this position of power, also some say strategically, because he had allegiance to Avshalom, and now better to make your enemies, put them on the top, give them power so that they don't want to overthrow you. Perhaps that was the reason as well. All right, so let's see Pasuk Yud Aleph. So now he's dead. All right, there's nothing you can say about it, whether he was right or wrong. The reality is, he was killed. Okay. V'Yoav v'Avishai achiv, Yoav and Avishai were brothers, Radav achrei Sheva ben Bichri. They were running after Sheva ben Bichri, because this was had nothing to do really about Amasa. Amasa's a sidebar over here. The problem was Sheva ben Bichri, as we saw in the very beginning of this chapter. Sheva ben Bichri, the Navi testifies about such a person, that he was a Bleal, a person who had no care, no yoke of heaven, and as the Masudas Sion said, he was a Rasha.
Is he the one that was cursing?
No.
Who was Sheva ben Bichri?
Sheva ben Bichri, here we have just a new face over here. This is someone who was, the person who was cursing, we saw in the previous in the previous parak, which his name was Shimi.
Oh, Shimi.
Right? I'm just trying to...
And what is
not a good guy. That's probably the better translation. I mean, the Mesuda Sion breaks it down as two different words, Bli'ol, right, as Linda just said. What? Without a lacking of fundamental principles of you know, an ol is a burden, which means you just take your poirik ol, means you just take all of the things which we're supposed to do, and you just throw it off of you as though nothing matters.
Was
you have no rules.
Not a good Jew.
Not a good Jew.
Why does it say radaf and not radfu? Yoav and Avisha,
it's
radaf. They did it as one.
That's a nice way of answering. Right. For good things and also for war. I guess in war it's probably even just as important to think as one. So, anyway, so they pursued after Sheva ben Bichri. The Ish, Almad Olav, it doesn't talk about who this guy was, plus it's not only that important, but there was a person that stood over the remains of Amasa, Minari Yoav. He happened to be a lad who was accompanied Yoav. So Yoav ran after Sheva ben Bichri, and he wanted someone to guard the remains of Amasa. But Yomer, and he said, whoever wishes to join Yoav and whomever is on David's side should go after Yoav. In other words, he was hoping that people would not just sit around, or maybe they would look at Amasa, who perhaps because he was such a powerful person, he was killed, so everyone would be shell-shocked and not know what to do, and they wouldn't know how to react, and therefore they may not want to join in the rebellion because they're scared that this great leader is lying on the ground on the street bleeding. So he said, no, don't worry about this guy. Just keep going and follow after Yoav. So he was kind of like a guiding traffic, if you will. The Amasa Mizgoyelel B'dam, we're going to see this even more clearly. Amasa was Mizgoyelel B'dam, B'soich Hamsilo. So he was in the middle of the road, and he was bleeding. So it was a very graphic sight. Vayar Ha'ish, and the person saw, Ki Amad Kol Ha'am, that it wasn't just one person stopping, but the entire nation stopped to gaze upon what happened. V'yatze v'as Amasa min ha'misla ha'sadeh, and this man said, this is getting crazy, so he removed Amasa, his remains, from the street. Ha'sadeh v'yashich alav beged, so he put him on a side where it was more conspicuous. People couldn't see exactly who it was, or people wouldn't have noticed. They just kept going on the street. And they covered the remains with a garment. Kashir ra'ah kol haba'a lav amad. Because after all, what was happening is that whenever people would see what was going on, they would stand still, which is very much like the tie-ups on the belt. Or God forbid, there's
rubber
a traffic. There's a bunch of
rubberneckers,
right. So they want to see, you know, what's going on over here. So they stop. And so the best thing you can do, even if all the roads are completely clear and the incident is on the other side of the highway, for some reason you're still crawling. So if you can get that person in that crashed car out of the way, somehow everyone's going to start, right, traffic start moving again.
Who is Ha'ish?
It doesn't...
The man that was standing watching? No.
That is the person. This is the person that, right. It doesn't, again, it, for some reason, I'm sure there is someone that discusses it, but I didn't see anywhere anyone mention this person's name. Perhaps it's not extremely significant exactly who was chosen, but I'm sure there is significance as to who he picked. But there was some soldier that was, you know, a traffic cop or a school cross guard or whatever it is, and just guiding traffic. So he wanted to make sure that Amasa, you know, people wouldn't stay and lose faith and gawk or whatnot, and this way they'll be able to move forward. So that was the purpose. And if you look in the Radak over here, just the very first words in Pasuk Yud Aleph, which we saw previously, but in the 11th verse, the Radak says, Omar Alav, Lazarez Haboim. Zrizus, he wanted to push them along. Shulyandu Alcholal, El Yilchol Achar Yoav, that people shouldn't stay in front of this deceased, and instead that they should follow Yoav. So it's much easier. Yoav, you know, is about to, you have a choice. You can sit here and stare, or you can run after Yoav, which means you may die because you're going to be in a battle fighting against this Sheva character, and who knows how many people he's going to have. We're going to see not too many in a moment. Plus, a good gimel.
So, what is Yoav is just like going after everybody now? Is that it?
Well, he was instructed in the beginning of the parak. It was really Amasa's job originally. Amasa lost that job, right? Died on the job by Yoav. So Yoav took upon himself, David actually told him that he should go and attack this guy, that he shouldn't allow Sheva to remain. And that's the reason why David was so adamant about the 3 days, because the more time that goes by, the more likely then Sheva's going to end up getting more people, and or better chance for him to hide. As we're going to see, he does have a good place for to hide, but it won't help. Eventually, we'll see, he's going to die in a very unusual way. So anyway, this is the pursuit after this one person, or perhaps many people. So everyone is running now together with Yoav, as well as his brother Avishai, after Sheva. Continuing in the next Pasuk, in Pasuk Yid Gimel, Kasher, Hoygamin Hamsila over Kol Ish Achar Yoav. So now that Amasa is no longer by the road, people were able to now pursue and go after Yoav. Weirdof Achar Sheva ben Bichr, which is exactly what this Ish, whoever it was supposed to do, and he did a great job of minimizing the scene. Nothing to see here. Nothing to see here. Hoga, if you look in Masudah Sion, is Husar, removes, right? So he, by the fact that his remains were removed from the street, therefore that's why people were then able to go and not be, it wasn't a distraction for people. So therefore they went after Yoav. Okay, that's how Masudah Sion translates it. V'yavar b'chol shiftei Yisrael aveila Uveis Ma'acha V'chol Haberim. So you have all these lovely, difficult words, but fortunately they're just names of places. So all of the Shiftei Yisrael was passed through, Ve'yavor, that he passed through all these different places, Avela, Uveis Ma'acha, and Beirim. So he went through all these different locations, he did. Who is he? We'll see that in a second. The Kahalu the Avo Af Achara. He said that as he was going through all these different cities, he was able to gather together and have numerous people also follow after him. Very vague, exactly who is him. So therefore the Radak helps us out. Oh, so it's actually a Machlokas, because there's two possibilities over here. Or maybe three possibilities. If you look in the Radak and Pasuk Yudalad, V'yavor Sheva ben Bichri. Possibly, who is the person this Pasuk is talking about? The guy who's being chased. Sheva. Shahay Barach Kishama Sheroyv ben Acharov. And once he heard that there's a whole group of people that were in a hot pursuit to kill him, Avr b'chol shifti Yisrael, Adavela, Uvah be'ir, Himalipa. So he went to all these different cities to seek refuge, or to possibly gather up some men to defend him, to help fight. And here's your explanation, says the Radak, V'yish Lefarish, V'yavor, what does it mean that he passed through? It means Al Yoav. It's referring to Yoav. So it's either the chaser or the chasee, however you want to interpret it. Or it's possible, if you want to use your imagination,
both.
They're both. They're obviously, one's chasing after the other. Now, it's obviously it's written in Lashon Yoch, it's singular, but certainly when one was running, and then thereafter he's following.
Right.
Now, the second explanation on some level may seem a little bit more logical, because we're going to see that they don't kill anyone else. There's not a whole huge war. There's this one guy, and once he's killed, that's the end. Everything is finished. Everyone goes back to their places, and no more problems. Which may lead to that conclusion that the Pusuk is not talking about Shem, is talking about Yoav, because it says that they gathered up a lot of people. Probably it would have been Yoav that gathered up a lot of people and to pursue this one guy. Okay. But we'll see the possibility of it being him as well, and perhaps people changed their mind once they saw that they'd be defeated. Pusuk Tesvav. V'yavol v'yasuru olav v'avela v'yis hamacha v'yishchu soyla el ir. So at this point, we now have Sheva, who is supposedly safe, and everything is going to be fine, no one's going to harm him. And the problem is that he has this huge group of people that, no matter what, are easily able to penetrate and go through this city. So therefore, what happened is that they went and they besieged him, they went around this walled city, Yishchu Soilel Ir, and as it's translated here, they poured a ramp against the city, Batamod Bachel, and it remained secure through the inner wall. So, and if
who
you
did this?
This is Yoav. So if you look in the
surrounding Shepha?
Yeah, he was hiding in a city. And we're going to see that in a moment, one of the most unusual women of all Jewish history was actually a resident in that city. But this is where he was seeking refuge. If you look in the English, we're in the middle of this pasuk, but nonetheless, V'tamod Bachel, where it says on page 343, it says it remained secure through the inner wall. Most commentators base their interpretations on understanding the word chel to mean an inner wall. Cities often built two walls for extra protection. The outer one was called a choma, and the inner one was a chel. And some explain that what they also did was, in between the two walls, was water or a moat to make it even more challenging. Even after you scale the outer wall, if you're to be able to get to the inner wall, there'd be archers and whatnot, and you wouldn't be able to survive because you'd be stuck in all this dirt and mud and what else is under there. So some explain that what they did was they had to gather like rocks and sand, which is similar to the word chel, and to pile it into this moat so that the water level would go down, if you will, because of all the sand. And this way they'd be able to get into the city. But nonetheless, if you were in that city, the only thing separating you from death was some rocks and some fences. The whole Amasher as Yoa Mashchisim Lohapil Achoyma. So all the people were in with Yoav, they were ready to kill every single person in that city. And they were about to destroy the wall, the choma, which would mean the outer wall, right? But after you destroy the outer wall, there's no longer an outer wall. There's no inner or outer wall. There's only one left. And they're able to smash down an outer wall. It's only time until the inner wall will be destroyed, let alone the limited provisions that were probably found in this city. It was just obvious that these people were not going to be living a whole lot longer. And it didn't look like the only person that was going to be killed was Sheva. It looked like they were about to wipe away and destroy and kill all the inhabitants of that city.
What is it? Vela is the city? And Beis Macha is this?
Yeah. It's Avela. Yeah.
Now it's interesting because it only repeats Avela and Beis Macha, but it doesn't mention anything about
Haberim. Right. Haberim may refer not necessarily to the place, it could be the name of the
people
that are in that place. That's a possibility of what that means. Yeah, that's possibly what it means. It could also be a neighboring community.
That says here, and this refers to a group of towns in the area of Be'erot.
Okay.
Of
right. So, but nonetheless, they certainly know exactly where their enemy is, And it's only time before they get him. And apparently kill everyone in sight. Why not? After all, maybe you would think that they deserve to be killed. Because what is it, harboring the enemy? Where you can't just have someone who is under arrest and you decide, I'm not going to allow the police to enter into my home, and you put an electric fence around it. You're not allowed to do that. You're breaking the law. You have to allow the authorities to be able to get the culprit. Similarly, over here, they're Mord B'Malchus. If this guy is rebelling against David HaMelech, they have no right to protect him. So if you're going to protect him, we're going to kill everything in our way to get to him. And you know what? Even after we get to him, maybe we'll kill you too. Unless you can come across someone who's very wise. And who is really wise? A woman! Vatikra Isha Chachama min ha'ir. So there was a woman who was very wise, who came forth from the city. Doesn't mention who it is. And we're going to see in Radak and the Rashi, one of the most famous women, possibly, if this is the same person, we're going to see, right. Shimu Imri Na. So she said, listen, please listen. Imri Na El Yoav. Right? So she was saying, please say to Yoav. Yoav wasn't there, but she was saying, please convey the following message. Karav Adhena V'adavre Lecha. Come close to here so that I may speak to you. So she was beseeching that she'd be able to speak to Yoav directly. Go directly to the source. So what did he do? He listened to her. Well, who is this lady? So she's smart. So what? She got a 2400 SAT. So that means I have to come close? Obviously, this is not just a smart person. This is a great, great person, which we'll see in a moment who it is. So Yoav, respecting this woman and what she stood for and the things she did in her lifetime, her long lifetime, he came close to her. But Tomer Isha, so what did she say? She asked the question, Ha'ata Yoav, are you really Yoav? Because maybe she may kill him or something, so he may be someone who looks like him. But Yomer Ani said, yeah, I am Yoav. Perhaps she was actually saying it as some explain, as Rashi says, some type of tochacha, some levels of rebuke. Like, you can't be the Yoav I know, because you're going to what? Kill out the entire nation. You have no right to do that. But Tomilo, so she said, Shema Divrei Amasecha. Please listen to the words of your maidservant, the Yomer, Shamea Anoichi. So he said, okay, I'm willing to listen to whatever you have to say. I'm going to internalize, not just I'm listening, but I'm going to listen. I'm going to truly internalize your words. But Tomer Lamor, so she continued speaking to Yoav, saying, Daber Yidabru Barishona Lamor. That your men should start off speaking, saying, Sha'ol yishalu b'avel v'chein heisamu. So he said, let them first ask the question to the people in Avel, and this way they will be able to, as it's translated, heisamu, lashon tam v'hashlama, which Mr. Sion says, they'll be complete and they'll also be at peace. In other words, what this woman is saying is that when it comes to Jewish people that are engaged in warfare, we don't just start shooting, right? We do ask first, then shoot. We ask them, are you willing to surrender? Right, the first thing we do, we try to do everything in our power to avoid confrontation. So if you have this potential enemy, you say, we do not want to fight you. If you're willing to accept certain requirements, which include the seven Noahite laws, perhaps certain taxes and showing allegiance to whoever was in power, then we're not going to fight you. And if they put up their little white flags, some flag, and that's it. We are not allowed to harm them. But look at you. You're Yoav. You're a person that's just marching in here, ready to wipe out an entire city without even having gone through the motions of asking whether or not we wish to surrender. What is this? You have no right to do such a thing. So this is what she says, and it's amazing that he wouldn't have known such a basic fact. But sometimes when you're so caught up in the heat of the moment, especially Yoav, who just killed Amasa, questionable him doing that, you can kind of understand their pursuit after this person. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean that it doesn't give the right in the event that Sheva ben Bichri would say, "I surrender." Well, that's different. He was more of a malchus, but a whole city wiping out innocent women and children for doing nothing, well, that doesn't seem to be right.
Hesamu is to make peace.
Hesamu comes from the word tam, so which is tumim. Like Yaakov was an ish tam, so he was to. That's how
says that they would have made peace.
Right. If you look in the Masuda Sion, he says it's Moshem
tam
v'hashlama.
To tam, it's finished.
Right. Right.
We surrender. You right. Come in. The mm-hmm. war is stopping.
Well,
fighting is stopping.
Right. That's probably the best way of translating it. So when it's finished, there's peace. Exactly. Very good. Very good. So let's just see this next sentence, then we'll look at some of the commentators. Anochi shalume emune Yisrael. As far as myself, I am someone that is complete in the emuna of having complete faith in the Jewish people. Atam levake shlohamis ir. And look at you. You're interested in wiping out and killing an entire city. The aim be Israel, a mother to Israel. You have a whole nation, a whole city of Jewish people. Lama tivala nachlas Hashem. Tivala, Mr. Steven says, is mashkos. Why would you want to wipe out and annihilate an entire heritage of Hashem? What are you doing? Very strange what you're doing. So this is the. This is what. Yeah, absolutely. So only someone with such character would be able to stand up and to be able to make such a statement. So, if we look in, there's quite a few pieces over here. Let's start off with Rashi. Rashi, where it says Sheol Yishalu B'Avel. So, Rashi says, which is five lines down, Im Sheol B'nei Chilecha B'Sheol Me'ir Hazos. We said, did you present the possibility of peace, Shishma Avel. You didn't go to this city and ask them if they wish to surrender. Okay? And if we look in your test, this is where the meat of all this comes about. If you look where it says in Pasuk Yotes in Rashi, Anochi Shalomi Amune Yisrael. So I am someone who has tremendous Amuna, tremendous faith. Ooh, that's a pretty brazen statement. Who is this lady anyway to say such a thing? So says Rashi. I'm someone from the city. You should know that when it comes to my connection and my allegiance, I show my allegiance to Yisrael, to the Jewish people, and also to the Melech. It's interesting the order that she puts it in. The first is to Yisrael, to the Jewish people, and then afterwards to the politics. Now this is where it gets fun. I'm in Rashi. Now we're about eight or nine, maybe nine lines from the top. And we'll pasuk yud tes. It says Medrash Haggadah, then you have parentheses. And then it tells us who is this woman. Sarach Bas Asher Haisa. So that's a nice little name, Sarach Bas Asher. Okay. So that's a wonderful thing. Ani Hishlamti Ne'eman L'Ne'eman. I am someone who is completely trustworthy. Al Yedei Nigla Arono Shel Yosef Lamoshe, Ani Higantil Yaakov Ki Yosef Chai.
Oh, she's
the one. Sarach Bas Asher is known for other things, two other things in history.
She was deaf. She was deaf.
That's Hushim Ben Dan. Maybe you're thinking about the one who killed
Esav.
That was Hushim Ben Dan. But Sarach Bas Asher was famous in her own right for doing. Let's go out of order over here. Well, in order, but it's interesting how it mentions the two things that she did, not in chronological order. Yaakov, we know that he was crying for so many years over the loss of his beloved son, Joseph. Joseph was devoured by wild animals after all the children came and showed this garment which was soaked in blood before DNA testing. You would have found out it was an animal's blood, but nonetheless. The dramatic story came about that he said, Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avichai, is my father alive. So ultimately the brothers, who upon seeing that Joseph was the viceroy of Egypt, had to relay this message to their father that Yosef was alive. Now when your person hears bad news or good news, sometimes you're asked to sit down. But sometimes when you hear such news, such shocking news, it could be devastating for the person. So, as the Mefarshim explain, the brothers didn't go to Yosef. And some, what they did, so on a simple level, is that they brought wagons. And then we saw that the wagons reminded Yaakov of the last thing he was teaching his son about Egla Rufa, which is a calf, which has the same word as a wagon. So it was a very indirect way, so kind of like cushioned these words so it wouldn't be so shocking. Others explain that what they did was they asked Sarach Bas Asher, Asher's daughter, which is one of the 12 tribes, one of the brothers, they asked his daughter, could you do me a favor? I know you have a beautiful singing voice, right? And I want you to sing to your grandfather. And she was singing, and in the song were little lyrics that hinted to the fact that this guy's alive, that your son isn't dead. So that's, in this way, like sometimes you hear a song, you love the song, but you don't even hear the words. Like, and like sometimes like, oh my gosh, that's what those words mean? Like, maybe I shouldn't like this song. So sometimes that's how it works. It's a gradual going into.
Yeah.
Right. So that was Sarach Bas Asher. So she had the tremendous chokhmah of knowing how to present to another person in a very sensitive way. You can imagine that even the tribes of Israel had no idea how to present this to their father. So they asked this younger girl, Usher's daughter, Sarah, to do this. The other example is the Aronu Shel Yosef. When it came, this is what Rashi said, that when it came time for the Jewish people to leave Egypt, and all the Jewish people were getting wealthy, gathering the gold and silver, Moshe had his own agenda, and that was to gather the remains of Yosef, right? Right, of Yosef. So the question is, where was he? He certainly would have, like Yaakov, had been made into a deity, and that's why Yaakov requested not to be buried in Egypt, as we see in Parshas Vayechi. Yosef certainly would have been that problem. So what they did was, according to the Gemara, they took his remains and they put him somewhere in the Nile. They put him in the Nile River, right? And the question is, how was he able to figure out where the Nile's? We haven't been there ever, but
it's large.
It's pretty large, right? To be able to say it's right there. So Sarach Bas Asher, for some reason, was able to pinpoint where it was. Why? Because Sarach Bas Asher lived in the generation of Yosef. Yosef was her uncle, kind of her half-uncle, some type of uncle.
Asher and Yosef.
Right. Yosef and Asher were like
half brothers,
but they're still an uncle. It's an uncle. It's an uncle. They lived in the same. They lived in the same generation. So when Yosef died, Sarach Bas Asher knew about this stuff. So again, Sarach Bas Asher was someone that knew tremendous information and knew how to speak to the greatest of people with ease. Now, so if you look in the English on the bottom over here, where it says 16 Isha Chachama, so it says, according to the Medrash, this woman was Sarah, daughter of Asher, and granddaughter of Jacob. Jacob was what had once blessed her with a very, here it adds another very, because it has to be that way, long life. If the woman was Sarah, she would have been at least 684 years old at this time.
And people didn't strong enough way to stand on the wall and yell out, where is your leader?
And she wasn't senile, she was an Isha.
She remained that way. So another way you can frame this is it doesn't necessarily mean, when you hear someone by the name of Sarfas Asher. You could also ask the question, also, she lived in the days of Yosef, right? And she knew at the time of the exodus of Egypt. Now, the Jewish people were not in exile, or not enslaved in Egypt, until after the brothers all died, right? And Yosef was the first to have died. She was alive at the time. She wasn't an infant. She knew, obviously, about it. So she was already a couple hundred years old then, at the time of, right? When the exodus of Egypt, he says Mitzrayim. So I've never seen this anywhere, but the way I'd like to possibly say, and I'm sure, hopefully I'm not saying anything which is completely incorrect or wrong, is that maybe when it says it was Sarach Bas Asher, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the same person.
Maybe it was
I'm saying maybe it could be either a descendant or it's someone who has that characteristic.
But we have an Isha Chachamah before in this book.
It doesn't mention it doesn't mention that this was her name.
Is there a time frame? How many years did David? When did David come?
A couple hundred years. I don't have the exact figures.
Now, actually, they say that Gilas Rus, Boaz, the incident with Rus and Boaz, I think it was 400 years after Yitzias Mitzrayim, Gilas HaTorah. And then David came a few generations after.
Right. His great grandchild.
So it could be a long time.
I'm saying it's like 300-400 years. Right? I'm saying that's why it says 684 years, because it was a couple hundred years from the Mitzrayim thing, and then another 400 and change or so from here. It depends on how old she was at the time that she saw our own.
It would be interesting to see in the Concordantia yeah, how many times is Isha Chachamah mentioned.
Fortunately, we have computers that you can do that with now. Thank God.
Sometimes it's a malach. It's never with an ish.
So, however it is, certainly it is someone who is wise, someone who was a person of tremendous faith. Now, the interesting thing is, you know, Rashi doesn't just throw in. Rashi's pashut pshat. Rashi always sticks to the simple explanation, and it seems to be a little bit of a stretch to want to believe it's the same person. That's why, again, it's possible that it was a descendant, or maybe it was someone who shared the same characteristics of leadership that Sarach Bas Asher represented, a woman who was able to know how to speak at the right time.
That she was clever and knew how to use her words.
Right. I mean, perhaps that's a way that we can make it a little bit more understandable. Okay. So anyway, this is the person. So with that, again, we can understand the logic as to why Yoav, if it was not just some smart woman, so who cares? I'm about to fight a war. What do I need to listen to her for? So Yoav was more receptive, because it was such a great person, which is maybe why Rashi has to say it was a very special person over here. Otherwise, Yoav's not going to listen when you're smart. Who cares if you're smart? I'm going to kill out this entire city. I can care less. So that's a possibility. Okay. Vayan Yoav v'yomar. So, upon listening to this plea from this woman, whoever she was, so what did... some very powerful, smart woman. There you go. So, how did he respond? So this is what he said. Chalila. Chalilali, right? Chalila, similar to like Chil Hashem, as we said before a couple weeks ago. If you look at Mesudas Sion, it's chulin, right? It would be profane or making something which is holy or something which is significant and cheapening it. I would never do such a thing. Im avala v'im ashchis. He uses both languages to swallow up and to destroy. I'm not going to do such a thing. So why would he say Chalila twice, just to be poetic? Maybe. Rashi says, Chalila Chalili, is Chalila Li, Chalila Melech. So it's not just, I'm just doing whatever I want to do. I would not do it, and the king would not do it. This is not the way that either of us conduct ourselves. Pasuk Chafal. Lo kein hadavar. Ki ish mehar Ephraim sheva ben Bichri shemo. I want to tell you, the reason why we're here is not to wipe out a whole city, but there's a guy who is not a good guy, who is in your city, and his name is Sheva ben Bichri. Nasi yadam ha-melech b'david, he's no tzaddik, he's a Russian, he raised his hands against the king, rebellious. Tenu oso levado, just give this guy up, the person that you're protecting, or you maybe didn't even realize he's there. Ve'elcha me'al yir, as soon as you give him to me, then we will go about our business. V'toymer ha'isha el Yoav, so the woman said, oh, okay, no problem, I'll gift wrap his head. Hine rosho mushlach alecha ba'ad ha'choyma. What I'll do, instead of you having to come into our city, because, yeah, I'll just throw his head over the wind, over the wall, and this way you'll see his head, and this way we apologize, we weren't expecting any guests tonight, so we don't want you to come into the city, because we don't really trust you, as far as we can throw you, so instead I'll throw this guy's head, all right? Now, obviously, the fact that this woman was smart, probably this guy's head was attached to his neck, at his body at the time, and probably if you were this guy, you probably wouldn't say, oh, that's a great idea. So how was she able to figure out how to complete all this? Obviously, it had to do with Chachma, which we're now going to see. Let's first see Pasuk Beis. V'tavo ha'isha el ko'am v'chachmasa. So she went to the people of this city, and she spoke with her wisdom. And because of the wisdom that she said, Bichrus es rosh sheva ben Bichri, as was requested, the head was cut off. No problem. Anything else you would like? Do you want something else? A cup of coffee? Or just the head? Okay, no problem. Whatever you ask, we'll do for you. V'ashlichu el Yoav. And they said, hopefully I have your catching mitt. We're throwing it to you. Good, Yoav, you have it. But Yiska, but shofar, they blasted the sounds of the shofar to announce as though that everyone should not be engaged in war anymore. V'yafutsu mi'al ha'ir, says Mesudasio in his Indian Pizor, they spread out. Ish o'halav, and all of the people went back to their tents. They all went back to their homes. The Yoav shav Yerushalayim el HaMelech, and Yoav went back to Yerushalayim, and that was it. No problem. So all they had to do was just cut off this guy's head, and everything was fine. So the question is exactly what did she say? What did she do? So there's a lengthy redak over here. We can also look at the English on page 346, which is the Marikaru, which says, based on the Medrash, suggests that she used a different approach in convincing the people to surrender Sheba. She told them that Yoav demanded 100 citizens to be executed, and they promptly told her that this was out of the question. She pretended to negotiate with Yoav again, and until she bargained him down, everyone likes a good bargain, to a demand only for Sheba. Some, the matter is more lengthy, maybe went up to 50, went to another number. Gratified with their success, the people consented. So perhaps if they would have said right away, give me him, perhaps they would have said, absolutely not. Let them fight us to the death. But once they saw that there was something worth negotiating, and they said 100, and down, it was only him, they said, okay, let's give of this person, and we'll call it a day. And that's how she was able to use her chokhmah, her wisdom. Now this, just for a moment, and then we'll just breathe, maybe just touch upon these last few psukim. Certainly, it's questionable. We know, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, that if a person puts a gun to your head and says, I want you to murder such and such a person, and if you do not, we are going to take your life. So there's a principle that we know that there's three cardinal sins that one is not allowed to violate, that a person actually would have to give their own life so as not to have them violate. One of them is murder, right? That you would have to allow yourself to be killed, the aliyah avor, that you shouldn't violate. And the reason the Talmud says is based on logic. It's not based on any sentence in the Torah. And the logic is, my chazis de dama didach sum fei. How do you know that your blood is more red? Maybe your friend's blood is more red, or the other way around. which basically means
who's
that,
more important?
Right, who says that you're more important than the other person, which is an amazing concept, and that it does make a difference if it's me and you, and I may be a lowlife, a nobody, I may, you know, be on my last legs of life, and this other person may be on the top of the world, whatever, still this principle applies, that you have no right to be able to compromise someone else's life in order to preserve yours. Which obviously leads to the question as to what right did this wise woman have to do such a thing? And of course, this is a very sensitive question that was asked numerous occasions, certainly in the times of the Shoah, the times of the Holocaust, when there were these different crazy things that came up in which questions were asked that one could only hope such questions would never have to be asked again. But the question is, how did she have the right to do this? So some explain that the whole principle is only when it's one and one. But over here, it's one against a whole city. So to preserve the life of a whole city, to save a whole city, by having one person executed, perhaps we can derive from this as a source that is permitted. And obviously, then you get into questions of numbers. What is a city? What is it, 10? Is it 1,000? Right. So at what point does that break down? Some say that that's not correct. Because perhaps the difference is that over here, this guy was pinpointed. It's one thing to say, I have 100 people over here. You pick the guy that you want me to kill. So you don't necessarily have the right to do that. But over here, it's very clear it was just this one person. And if this one person would have been killed, then no one else would have been harmed. Perhaps we can't derive so much from the story. And also, some explain the whole prohibition is only if you do it, as the Rambam says, be a dying. That you're the one that pulls the trigger. That's when you cannot make this choice between your life and someone else's. That you can't pull the trigger. But maybe if it's someone else that's doing it, even though maybe your words, your command is comparable to pulling a trigger. So there's a lot that's discussed in this topic. But nonetheless, they're able to disperse. Let's just conclude this parak. In the end of this parak, just discusses the people that went back, and a little bit about those who were under David. The Yoav, Pasuk Chaf Gimel, El Kol HaSava Yisrael, so Yoav was in charge of the entire army, which he was originally. V'noya ben Yoyada al HaKresi v'al Plesi. So Kresi v'al Plesi sometimes means the Ur V'tumim. Over here, it's certainly referring to the archers. Now, in this, the Radak actually talks about, and if we just spend one, we'll stop in 2 minutes. If you look in the English on page 347, where it says verse 23, that we know that although David had replaced Yoav with Amasa, now that Amasa was dead, it was necessary once again to find a suitable army commander. That's what Rashi says. So he says, well, why would the king choose Yoav, whom he despised for killing his son Avshalom, especially after he had murdered Amasa? That's a very strong word, murdered, which, again, whether or not he had the right to do so. So the Radak, which we're not going to see inside, but it is nice to see, it says here in the English, explains that after Yoav's spectacular handling of the Sheba affair, that he was killed, he was able to kill this one guy. He didn't kill him, his head was blown off. David felt he had no choice but to reinstate him as commander. Eventually, however, David instructed his son Solomon to punish Yoav for his barbaric and treacherous acts, including this, but that we'll not see until the next Sefer Melachim, Book of Kings. But it's interesting how he was in a pickle. David had this political dilemma as to what to do. He felt because he was so heroic that everyone looked up to Yoav, even though he wasn't happy with him being put in that position, he felt that he really had no choice. Pasuk Chavdal. Adoram al-Hamas, when it came to Adoram, he was in charge of the taxes. Lovely. Yehoshaphat, who achilud hamaskir. Then this other person, Yehoshaphat, he was the maskir, which the Radak says the Sefer HaZichronos. He was the one who wrote down all the historical events, the Book of Chronicles.
The recording secretary.
Exactly. Ushva Soifer, and this another person was the a scribe. The Tzadok of Yasar Kohanim, which we know that they were Kohanim before. Began Ira Hayairi Hayakoin LaDavid. Also Ira, which is translated into English as Ira, was also a Kohen to David, in which some explain that David would give him special things as certain things can be given to a Kohen. So for whatever reason, he always decided to give things particularly to him. Stop here.